Hello, everyone, and welcome to NWR Connectivity episode 307. I'm your host, John Reardon, and I am joined, as usually, by Neil Ronahan.
Hey, everybody. I hope you're all enjoying Pokemon Legends Arceus.
No, that's the worst one. That's the worst one now.
And also here this week is Joe DeVader.
Hi, everybody. I'm here, and I'm calling it Arceus because I can't abide by it being Arceus.
Arceus is the right way to say.
I'm 100% on board with Arceus. If it's going to be Arceus, it needs an H after the C. Thank you. The end. That is
Wouldn't
my argument.
Then it's just Arceus.
Yeah. No, because that's how, like, so spell Archangel.
Arceus.
Okay, fair.
Like, that's how you spell words that sound like that. It's how you spell the word that they claim Arceus is based on. I just said Arceus. Damn it.
Yes!
Now I'm confused. We're all going to flip around as we hear each other say it.
Oh, probably.
Here's the big takeaway. The English language is dumb.
Yeah?
Yes. Though that's, we didn't invent that word.
Yeah, that's on the British.
Yeah.
It's either on the British or the Japanese. We didn't do it. We fought a war to get away from this.
Yeah.
And yet here it is.
World War III will be about pronunciation.
Specifically of Arceus.
It's really, really easy to blame Britain for things. That's gotten me through most of my life up to this point.
It's like, you say tomato, I say, fuck you.
Get off my country. So we are going to do a quick check-in, because now last week, Neil was the only person who had played Pokemon Legends Arceus.
Now I'm old news.
Yeah, this week we all have. So we won't spend the whole episode on it, but we have some thoughts that we wanted to share. And then we're going to talk about some video game music, because one does not simply have Joe DeVader on without talking about video game music. So that's, even though I think we've had you on before and I don't think we talked about video game music. But like,
I've been on one episode and it was mostly us talking about Next Level Games and Paradise Killer.
Yeah. And I think Neil disappeared partway through.
He did.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
He just got so bored.
Was that a kid?
It was a baby thing. I just
assumed that he was like, I'm not really into this episode.
He didn't want to talk to me about my weird not Danganronpa.
Neil's like, I've really always preferred Matt. And then just logged off.
I'm at a point with like the games like Paradise Killer and even Danganronpa where like, I respect them, but I just have no interest in playing them anymore.
I enjoyed my time with Paradise Killer. I cannot say I would. I'm going to make Matt play it at some point because this is the power that he has handed me for some reason beyond me. And so far, luckily,
you don't
for
even
him,
have to beat him in Mario Party to do this.
It's super cool. It just needs to be an indie game and I can just make him play it. And I don't know how he's not constantly saying no.
So, Joe, you're missing this week's Mario Party Monthly, right?
Unfortunately, yes.
Let's get you on the record. I think we might have a fourth person joining. I don't know what the traction on that, but let's say we do wind up with, I think the proposed as of now is going to be Matt, Xander, and Alex, and a hard CPU that if the hard CPU wins, then they all have to play League of Legends, I think is the...
That's what Matt has said. I proposed if the CPU wins, then I get to pick what game all three of them are playing.
Oh.
Are we sure that Matt doesn't like League of Legends? Did he propose this?
Yes, he did. Oh. I talked to him about it when he was streaming it for his punishment, when Alex hoisted that upon him.
That was honestly like greatest betrayal is Alex doing that.
I have a punishment game picked out specifically for Matt that would do actual like damage to him. And I can't wait until one day 6 years from now when the stars align and I get to pull it out.
So, well, going into it, what is your prediction for who will win and who will have to play some nonsense game on Twitch?
So they're playing on Peach's Birthday Cake this month, which I recently watched some of the Hololive VTubers. Sorry, I'm contractually obligated to mention them once.
That's fine.
Every time I'm on any show. I was watching them play that map, and that map is brutal. the star stays in one spot, but you can like plant piranha plants that steal stars and coins. And I honestly don't know, but I think Xander's soul was ripped out of his body last month. And I think he needs a win. So I'm going to go ahead and put my faith in Xander.
Xander's been doing like some research, right? He's been like watching videos and
Zoom
like,
dykes.
He's been having his training montage this whole time. So yeah, hopefully he doesn't just lose again.
What is it? He streamed Ice Climbers and he got COVID from the game.
Yes,
that's the current canon.
That is the lore. Yep.
And it was also sort of Justin's fault because Justin joined him for part of the stream. So you know, it's all going around.
I'm surprised Justin spent time with him and didn't catch it.
Justin is a virus to Twitch channels.
That's just, you know, a good indication that his vaccine's working.
Xander was like, hey, Justin, you should come join. This is your moment. And Justin's response was, I haven't even played it yet. And I had to hold back from him like, so? That makes it better. What are you talking about? When we played in December, I bought the game that day. So I don't want to hear those excuses.
And also, like, real talk, if you played Mario Party back in the N64 era, you played this game before.
Yeah, you played this one, yeah.
Yeah.
It's kind of weird how a lot of the strategy, I've only really played the game with my son as we're on the same team playing against CPU. But it is just like Peach's birthday cake. I was like, oh, dude, we got to lay down some piranha plants. Let's go. Like, a lot of the strategy came back just like in a wash of these memories that have been like laying dormant for two decades.
I think we only have one map in Superstars left after this, which would be Horrorland. So that'll be next month's map. And that's from my favorite Mario Party, the best one, Mario Party 2. Sorry, this is non-negotiable. This is an objective fact. And I am really looking forward to that one.
I'm not going to argue you on Mario Party 2. Because Mario Party 2 is, I mean, from that early era, it's not the first one that would ruin your N64 controller.
Yeah, it's not the one that wants to hurt you.
It ruins your hand. Yeah, it'll kill you long before it kills your controller.
But yeah, I think I'd agree with 2 being my, because I don't really like any of the GameCube ones that much.
I never played any of the GameCube
ones. I have no attachment to them. And like, I played 8 and 9 on Wii. And they're fine. And like, actually, Super Mario Party was pretty good, but that doesn't exist according to the canon of Mario Party Superstars.
The maps are too small. You can't see them.
It's in a different timeline.
It's in the hero loses time.
Yeah.
But yeah, John, who are you? So Joe thinks that Xander's going to win. Who do you think is going
to
win?
I'm betting on Alex purely to bet against Matt.
And I will go specifically, I think Xander will win and Matt will get the punishment.
Oh, I hope so.
Do you have to get last place to get the punishment?
Yes. So the rules is whoever wins gets to pick a game that the fourth place person has to stream.
Okay. Yeah, I couldn't remember if they got to pick who got the punishment too.
I wish. That would make my job way easier.
Yeah, because all you'd have to do is win. But no, I mean,
Easier said than done.
Poor Xander, man.
I don't know if either of you watched like clips of that.
I saw the game.
The game had it out for him specifically. Not even just us.
I checked in on a couple clips. Like I was actually while my son was falling asleep, I was watching it muted, and I could just it was like I just saw Xander lose a star. I was like, no. But then you see like the chart at the end, and like he's like vying for second place until like the last couple turns, and then he just craters.
Yeah, it got to the point where like he just sort of stopped talking, and then I think at one point he got up and he got like a bottle of booze and brought it back with him. I might be misremembering that. I do know when I told him he was playing Ice Climber, because I won last month, not to brag, he walked off and brought back a scarf. Like in this defeated, like, I'm going to need it for the cold. It gave me no joy to give that man my least favorite video game on earth.
Yeah, I feel like you need to play more video games because in the grand scheme of things, Ice Climber isn't that terrible.
Ice Climber's the only one I've been for. Okay, so here's the thing. Ice Climber at least had the decency to be over in 2 hours when I played it for Smashterpieces. I would not have played it otherwise. Earthbound took 3 months, and that's 3 months of my life I'll never get back. So I guess, you know what? You're right. It's Earthbound, actually.
Good choice.
In my very minimal defense of Ice Climber is that I think it is the concept of it is neat if you think of the era, and that they did Super Mario Brothers and stuff that was all about horizontal scrolling, and they're like, what if we did a platformer that's focused on vertical scrolling?
And then they sat down and said, but what if also jumping didn't work?
Yeah, what if jumping was terrible and everything was bullshit? Like that, yeah, everything breaks down after the idea, but I will give Ice Climber credit in that the concept of it, of just like, oh, like we've been doing horizontal platformers. What if we made a vertical one?
And the weird thing is, you can also see that in Kid Icarus at the beginning. But yeah, guess what? That part's the worst part of Kid Icarus. Yep. The game gets demonstrably better after you get out of the underworld.
And that's another one where I think the original Kid Icarus, soundtrack a banger. Game kind of blows, but it's this weird thing where like it's very difficult up front. And then as you get later in the game, it gets way easier. Like, it's just like a different difficulty curve. I recall, I don't know if this is a little bit like urban legend or if there's actually interviews to back it up, of like, it was an experiment with what if we made it more difficult up front and then rewarded people with like more power and more interesting gameplay. Because that was kind of made in tandem with NES Metroid, which also does that similar thing of like, you're going to start off and be powerless, and then slowly gain missiles, get abilities, get different beams, and then be like a wrecker of worlds.
Well, the weird thing is, like, Kid Icarus also has this invisible leveling system.
Yeah.
That is, like, so weird. Like, breaking pots takes away experience. It's really, really weird. And I can see where they were going, but boy howdy, that is a game that is way before its time and not in a good way.
Yep. And then the Game Boy game for Kid Icarus is really good.
Yeah, I didn't super dig it, but Matt really liked it. It's better than the original.
Yeah, it's way better than the original.
And then Sakurai made a Star Fox game.
Yeah, I feel like that's, we should, I don't know, if there's ever any excuse to replay Kid Icarus Uprising, we should do that. But we're in the middle of that 3D Zelda game club.
That'd be a weird game club.
One day Smashterpieces is going to get there.
Yeah.
I was going to say the ETA is that, what, like 10 years?
Oh, God. That's a good question, because games. The thing is, we've been averaging like 10 games a year, but games are only getting longer from where we are.
Yeah. Because you're going to have to do Xenoblade at some point.
Eventually, we got Xenoblade. We got Xenoblade 2, Persona 5.
Are you doing like actual Xenoblade, or are you doing Future Connected for Shulk?
We're doing actual, like, regular. Original Xenoblade Chronicles.
You could have saved some time.
Specifically, we'll both be playing the Switch version.
Okay.
But it's, I've never played it, so I don't know anything.
It's so good.
It is a very good video game. It is also very, very long.
Yeah, though, to be fair, longest game on our list is like, according to How Long to Beat, which not always the best source, but it's good baseline at least.
It's a good baseline.
Persona 5 is like twice its length.
Yeah.
And that one has a potential to be almost a year on its own.
Yeah. Like, I think Xenoblade, I think the thing with that is that like you could easily spend 100 hours on that game. If you critical path it a little bit, you can wrap it up in under 50 probably.
I feel like the first one's probably like 70 or 80.
Yeah. Yeah. I feel like a normal, I mean, without looking at How Long to Beat, I think like a like non-beelining playthrough for Xenoblade 1 is probably 60-70. And if you kind of like, I forget what I did, although actually I've only ever beaten it once, weirdly, on 3DS. When I was playing through it on Switch, I knew that, well, one, I took a long time in the first area and basically just 100%ed it before I moved on. But then like as I started playing more of it, I started kind of like zipping through it, because it's just like, oh yeah, I know where I have to go, I know what I have to do, I know like how to prepare more. Because my first time actually playing through it, like halfway through, I'm just like, oh, I need to like relearn the battle system to get better at this, because I'm getting my ass kicked.
Xenoblade has a lot of systems, and it's easy to skip them. And then realize later, like, oh, wait, if I just make use of these systems, the game gets way easier.
Like the game breaking thing is when you realize that you don't always have to control Shulk.
Yeah,
that is good to know ahead of time. We're not, I mean, that's, but to put it in perspective, like Xenoblade Chronicles is game number 63, and we just started game number 41.
So you've got some time, couple of years.
It's going to be a while. I do have, by the way, because of who I am as a person, the number that How Long to Beat puts for Xenoblade, because I have my own personal copy of the spreadsheet with all of them, so I can keep track of generally how much longer we have. How Long to Beat puts Xenoblade Chronicles at 63.5 hours.
Yeah, that sounds accurate.
Which, as far as everything goes, puts it as the third longest game on the list, second only to Xenoblade Chronicles 2.
Okay.
Hell yeah.
And then Persona 5. And then before Xenoblade Chronicles, it beats out Dragon Quest 11 by a good 10 hours.
I have no idea how long Xenoblade 2 actually was, because I
you reviewed
I reviewed it, and so it was just like beeline through the main storyline, and then I went back and did a bunch of side stuff later. I should replay that, get a better feel.
You can replay it if you want. I will replay Torna, or I will play Torna.
No, yeah, you're playing Torna, and I have to actually finish Future Connected.
I mean, if they do announce a Xenoblade 3, I imagine Future Connected is going to be tied into it, and maybe actually seeing a trailer for Xenoblade 3 will make Future Connected not terrible.
It will not.
That's if Xenoblade 3 gets announced, I will play Torna this year. That is my pledge.
Fingers crossed for Xenoblade X 2.
Yeah, that'd be great.
Why is that still not on Switch?
Nobody knows. Speaking of things that are on Switch and have enemies that occasionally kill you really fast because they're really high level in a random place.
I really love how, like, I love that Xenoblade element of Pokemon Legends Arceus.
I do too. That was, so my wife and I rolled, well, I say my wife and I, mostly my wife, I was also there, rolled credits on Arceus last night. Yeah, I sat and watched. And yeah, I will say one of like my favorite early moments from that was her just wandering around in that opening area and seeing like the really big Rapidash.
Yeah.
And like the music changes and everything gets quiet. And we were both like, oh no, just run away.
And then like, you lock onto it and it's like, it's level 40.
And its eyes are glowing and it just like slowly turns to look at you and it's like, just fucking run. Don't fight that.
Get out.
All your Pokemon are like level 5.
my Bidoofs.
I've caught so many Bidoofs.
It's something that even as I'm like very deep into the post game of just like actually researching every Pokemon and finishing up my Pokedex, I still have those moments where I'm like, oh, there's an alpha there. Oh God, it's the level 70 Alakazam. Like I just have like my party is not equipped for this. It's just like six Pokemon that I'm trying to complete the research tasks for. And I like that it kind of keeps that up throughout. Mm-hmm. And the levels are never like, there's usually Pokemon that you can defeat in the area that you're in, but you might just stumble upon like an absolute MF-er of a Pokemon.
Mm-hmm.
Or you could stumble into a distortion area. And then a level 40, like Mr. Mime, walks out of it and just destroys you.
Yeah, the space-time distortion stuff is incredible. I really like it. Although, if I do have a complaint, is that like after a while, you kind of just see the same Pokemon. And then, especially if you're hanging out in one region for a while.
I'm just sad because I saw Heracross in my first one and I couldn't catch it before I died. I like Heracross.
Oh, how far are you?
I am in the Crimson Coast currently, but I keep having the problem where the game's like, oh, you got to go save this noble Pokemon. I'm like, all right, that's cool. I'm going to go back to the Obsidian Fieldlands because I still got to catch like 15 Starly. And I'll get back to y'all on that.
If you really want a Heracross, get the Basque Legion, like the ride Pokemon, and then go back to Obsidian Fieldlands and you might find yourself a Heracross in some new area that you can access.
Interesting. I would like to be able to cross water, considering your player character drowns if they look at a river for too long.
Yeah.
It's weird that they let you swim at all.
Yeah. That's like, the weirdest part is like, it's not just an instant, you
right. Fell in water. Like, turn around.
You like tread water for a few seconds.
There's no benefit to it. Like, so when you do get the Basque Legion ride Pokemon, when you're in the water, you can hit a button and then like the ride Pokemon activates. Like it does that where I'm trying to think. I mean, you guys well, I guess, John, you've seen the credits roll, so you know it. But some of the ride Pokemon, like if you're in an area where like it would make sense to activate, you'll get a little button prompt that'll be like, press the A button to do this. But like, there's no benefit to just like swimming as a human in the water.
Right. Like, it's not even like you.
Yeah. You I mean, you just drown shortly, but like
you're like treading water, and the worst part is you can like move forward very slowly, but it's so slow that you will never reach any land.
And there's no kind of meter to be like, oh, you're almost gone. Oh, you're gone. It just happens.
Right. And it's not like Wind Waker where it's like a long enough time that you can just barely scoot across sometimes. Like it's like, no, if you go in the water, you're going to die.
Yeah.
You barely have time to turn around.
I've heard some people of trying to like figure out ways to manipulate the game, which it is funny. I know I've seen Matt post a lot of clips online of like trying to get up hills that you might not supposed to be.
Matt found out last night on stream that he had accidentally sequence broken and gotten into an area he wasn't supposed to be in yet.
Yeah. But that's the thing is, I think with some of the water, even in Obsidian Fieldlands, I think even if you try to wizard your way across, you hit a brick wall. You hit an invisible wall.
Mm-hmm.
It's really silly in that way, because it should just be like, you're not wearing swimmies. You can't go in the water. And then when you hit the water, once you have the ride Pokemon for it, you should just turn into the ride Pokemon.
It'd be like in the Pokemon games where you can run. If you try to run before you get the running shoes, your guy just kind of like trips and falls over.
Yeah. But now this one would trip and fall into the water and drown.
Yeah, like it's actively an animation of them drowning. They can't swim. Yeah. It's so weird. And it's such
a
weird
fall from the sky, but you can't tread water.
It is such a weird choice, too, when you look at how much of this, like, I know people have been making the Breath of the Wild comparison for months, but like, you in the music, even you can hear that they're like the Wild Pokemon battle music has the same intro as the Guardian battle music.
It's
blatant. That's exactly what they're doing.
It's as if people are like, we can make Breath of the Wild, and then they find out that they can't.
I will say, I think the soundtrack is really good. Probably better than Breath of the Wild. The soundtrack's like incredible.
I mean, it's more present of a sound. I will say the sound design in Breath of the Wild still trumps it, but the actual soundtrack is very good. Like,
Jubilee Village, the field music and
Jubilee Village is a real bop. One that got stuck in my head, and the battle music is good. I just feel like the instrumentation, I'll let the soundtrack podcast man better phrase it, but for me it's a slightly like older instrumentation of a lot of the familiar music.
Anytime that cello comes in like the main the first field area, like it's good.
And it does do that good ambient noise too, where you can hear Pokemon around you.
Yeah.
The main thing I think is probably responsible for that is, so we talk a lot about on my other podcast, Original Soundchat, we talk a lot about MIDIs and how sometimes MIDIs suck a lot and you can hear it, usually with trumpets, which aren't super present on this soundtrack, thank God. But we've found like pretty regularly, like traditional Japanese instruments translate really well to MIDI. Mm-hmm. And I don't think any of this is live instrumentation, because Game Freak is not given enough time. They're not given enough time to put live instrumentation into these games, as much as I think Pokemon soundtracks could very heavily benefit from. But for the most part, like, it's always going to be MIDI, and stuff like Kodos and like the Shamisen and stuff like that, it all translates surprisingly well to MIDI format. Like, they sound good.
It doesn't sound like the cello, for example. Like, it ain't a real cello, but it's not off-putting. It's very pleasing.
I took a lot of recording classes in college, and one of the things my teacher told us pretty often is like, there are good MIDIs out there. MIDIs have gotten good to a point where for some instruments you can't tell the difference. 100% just can't tell the difference. Trumpet's still not there, but that depends on, did you get the good MIDI? Because there are still a lot of really bad MIDIs out there.
Sure.
But honestly, like, for somebody who doesn't listen to a lot of music in general that is like performed live, like, I'm pretty sure most people could probably point out a guitar, whether it was MIDI or mm-hmm. not everybody's heard a guitar to hell and back, but you get like a violin, that's a little bit harder at that point. A cello, that's a little bit harder. And so the sign of a good composer is usually like they can work with that really well. And I think I haven't actually looked into who's done the soundtrack for this game, but they achieved it pretty well. I think they did a pretty good job at picking stuff that works for the style they want to use. And yeah, it's a really, really good soundtrack. The trainer battle song in particular, I really, really like, which is weird, 'cause you don't hear that one.
No, it's very rare that you fight a trainer in this game.
Yeah, you fight Ray like twice, and I hate him more every time. I hate Ray. I hate him so much. He's so annoying.
Wait. Is that the partner?
So I play Pokemon games as a girl because better fashion
that's
choices.
That's what I was like, Ray, who's that?
What is their name, and what is Don's equivalent name?
I'm trying to, I can't remember off the top of my head. There are a lot of NPCs in this game.
They all have names too. It's really neat. And another thing I really like about sort of the whole atmosphere of this game is even at the early point that I'm at, like, it's really cool to see the village sort of evolve in that everybody in that village starts as like, Pokemon are scary as hell, and I don't want to go anywhere near them. They can shoot fire out of their mouths? No, thank you. And slowly, like, you start bringing people Pokemon to help them with, like, work. And it's this farming. Really, really neat sort of progression towards the Pokemon world we usually see, which is where, like, Pokemon are an integral part of all of society essentially. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I think it's really cool to sort of see that start to build up just as you go. It's neat. I love it.
It's a really cool game. I sincerely hope that this is just what all Pokemon games are going to be in the future.
But I would love to see another one. I want more that take place in this time period because I want to see what other regions look like now.
So I did. Oh, wait. We have a listener mail that is very relevant to this. When I got the email, I read it and like just my morning was ruined because I was just thinking about it. So I'm gonna go get it right now. From James T, who now
our old friend.
Yeah, as I referred to him as James T last week, he requested that I call him James Tiberius Kirk.
Okay.
So he says, "Hey friends, your Arceus, your Arceus, your Arceus discussion got me thinking. Given the inevitable remake cycle, we're probably not too far from a Black and White remake. I'm guessing we'll get one more mainline entry on Switch, and Black and White Remake will be the first Pokemon on Switch 2. Do you think we'll get a Legends set in an earlier Black and White world? Like a Revolutionary War Pokemon Legends? That'll be pretty amusing, since Black and White was supposed to be Poke America."
That would be really neat.
Real quick, I do have to say, it won't be on the Switch 2, because they release a Pokemon game at roughly every 3 weeks. So like we're good.
Black and White remake will be out what, like spring 23? Like is that
That seems generous. I'm gonna say January. I'm gonna say it's getting announced in like 2 months.
Yeah.
I assume they just like after Diamond and Pearl, they just like Ilka was like, "We can sleep for a second, right?" And they were like, "No, get back to work." And just pulled them now. Out. Yeah, yeah, you're ours now. No.
We don't really know what is next up for Pokemon. And I guess like we usually find ourselves in this, but this is the first time that I feel like their formula and shakeup has really been shifted in some way. Mm-hmm. Like I guess like, you know, Let's Go was kind of more posed as a spinoff in a mm-hmm. better, in a bigger way than BDSP and Legends were.
And it did fill a remake slot, right, in the release schedule? Or did it not? Yeah, it did, because it came out after Ultra Sun and Ultra Moon. So it was in...
Let's Go. Let's Go, yes. Let's Go came out after that, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, and then Let's Go, and then Sword and Shield came after Let's Go, and then we had Brilliant Diamond, Shining Pearl, and then Legends Arceus. And the idea, because I was thinking with like Legends Arceus, like someone pointed out to me, I think I probably mentioned it last week, about how a lot of the original 151 that aren't in Diamond and Pearl do not show up in this game at all. Like, there's no Bulbasaur, there's no Squirtle, you know, there's no Charmander. Like, a lot of, like, those staples that usually make their way into every game no matter what aren't there. So someone, the idea of, like, a Pokemon Legends Mew, like, could be a potential follow-up. But this idea of Pokemon Legends, you know, who's, like, I don't even remember in Black and White, like, who would be the Arceus fill-in.
That would be Zekrom.
So, I'm going to say this in a really vague way, but there is stuff in Legends that alludes to stuff in Black and White very specifically.
Well, I've seen multiple mentions of the other regions multiple times now.
There's a character that shows up that ties into Black and White.
I do think, though, it's really weird. Me and Matt were actually talking about this just last night. About how this game doesn't seem to be able to make up its mind about how familiar people are with Pokemon, because
it's very inconsistent.
Half the cast is like, Pokemon are scary, and they act as if they just popped into being like a month ago, but then you have Professor Lavinson being like, oh, it's like the ride Pokemon in Alola. It's like, wait, those already exist?
Yeah.
Then why does nobody know anything about Pokemon?
Yeah, because they do reference it. I mean, like, there are other regional Pokemon do show up.
At least Lilligant one. Is from Black and White, I'm pretty sure.
Yeah, and but I mean, like, straight up, like, there is a side quest in the back half that you actually get one of the regional variants from another generation.
Well, also, the best one, though, is if you look at the Galaxy headquarters, their chimney is shaped like a Galarian Weezing. I noticed that the awesome. Other night. It's really good.
But yeah, I mean, the idea of, because I was kind of thinking just more like, oh, it'll be other, you know, like ancient Japan stuff, like you know, how a lot of those, I mean, pretty much every region pre-Black and White. But the idea of, like,
if I had to pick a region, like, personally, I'd go with Johto, simply because it has all that ancient mysticism. But I don't know.
Give me Rev War Pokemon.
Yeah. Like, no, I do. I love that.
All I want is...
Give Machop a musket.
Yes. What dumb American Pokemon can we call it? Ice cream cones. Let's go.
Beautiful.
Garbage. Just a bag of
Why garbage. Did you both say it at the same time?
Because it's the first place my brain goes.
I do love, like, and it's been a while since I played Black and White, but I just remember being like, oh, like, this is like their version of New York, and like, oh, this area is clearly New Jersey, and it's just a bunch of dipshits and cowboy hats. Like,
there's also I know some people believe, like, Black 2 and White 2 has a city that's exclusive to those. That's like this super polluted, like, city, like, where the gym leader is poison type and all this stuff. And I believe some people have been like, oh, that's supposed to be Jersey. I don't live on the East Coast. I don't know none of this stuff.
I do. I remember when Black and White first came out, like, I was trying to map it out. Like, there's definitely like a Brooklyn vibe to one of the cities from what I remember. But it has been over a decade since I played those games.
What part is the desert based on?
Probably upstate New York.
Like from the movie I Am Legend, or?
No, from the movie. The Place Beyond the Pines.
It's a really good game, though. Like, I'm one of the people that, I don't know how much of this was spite, but when the whole hullabaloo about Sword and Shield was going on, it's like, no, I loved Sword and Shield. I thought
they
were fantastic. I don't think they look nearly as bad as people were saying either.
Especially after looking at Arceus.
Oh, boy, in a little context. Yeah.
After looking at this game, there are parts of this game where
it is stunningly ugly.
You look at it and you're like, I can't believe, like, they let it come out like this. But of course they did. The Pokemon Company can't delay games. They don't do that.
There have been multiple points where we have, like, stopped and, like, just sat there and gone, what's causing the game to do that?
And
me and my wife have done it. I've had Matt send me stuff and be like, explain this to me.
Yeah.
And I'm like, dude, and I've told him there'll be like these random visual glitches where I'm like, okay, I know things that can cause this to happen, But I also know that Arceus isn't using them, because if it was, it would look better.
Yeah. So there's also just some like wonderful jank that, I guess dancing around spoilers, there is a point later in the game that kind of like changes how things are. Mm-hmm. If you complete side quests that require you to talk to certain people that you can't talk to, I completed some side quests during that time, and it just took me to an undefined space, and was like, you completed the side quest, and I could thankfully fast travel out of it, so I wasn't locked into it, but I was just like, what the hell just happened? And also, here's a fun thing to note, is like, if you ever like have a quest where like, let's say you're like, it's like you just after you defeat one of the noble Pokemon, they'll be like, all right, we have to go back to Jubilife, and like you'll be back in the building. When you get control of yourself, you can look at the map, and you will likely not be where you actually are. I have had times where like it's shit, like I am very clearly like talking to the commander, and if I back out to the map, it'll be like, oh, you're over by the farm in the town.
My two favorites that I've seen so far, I guess three. One, Minecraft has prettier birch textures than this game. Vanilla Minecraft. Two, I saw an Onyx at one point that literally looked like it was rigged incorrectly. Like its neck looked broken. Its moves were all like, well,
that was a special variant.
A shiny one.
It looked broken. But my favorite is if you go to sleep in your room and you go to like another lighting situation. So like you go from morning to night, or you go from night to morning, the lighting through your windows changes after it fades back in from black. Yep. So you can watch it happen. And that is the opposite of the order those are supposed to go in. And I can identify why that happened. Your if statements are in the wrong order. I'm not even a programmer, and I can tell you what the hell causes that. Come on! It is kind of a bummer that it looks as bad as it does, but hopefully, since this engine and all that is like, everything's, the pieces are there, maybe some artists could, you know, touch the game at any point before the next one.
I know that people have messed around with modding the game on like real Switch hardware, mm-hmm. And added in many of the features that I and plenty of other people have pointed out as being like, this sure would help. And none of them seem to have any significant impact on performance.
See, the one that I want to get that I've been told does exist, that I don't do homebrew stuff on my Switch. I just lazy.
Yeah, I get it.
And you're a law-abiding citizen.
I am a law-abiding good citizen boy. Please do not look at how I streamed any of the NES games from Special Pieces. And like the one that I want changed isn't even a performance thing. It's, hey, Game Freak, 20 years of playing video games means that I think the plus button is pause.
Yes.
Not like it is in this game, where it's the I would like every Pokemon to see me now, please, yep. button.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I can't, I've it is, lost.
I'm like 50 hours into this game, and I still do that from time to time. Where I'm it's like, so where I'm like, I gotta pause real quick, and I'm like, oh, crap.
Well, especially,
there are three buttons that you can use to like basically pause the game. It's,
and none of them are the pause button.
Yeah, up on the D-pad, down on the D-pad, and minus. I do think the map being mapped to minus is fine.
Oh yeah, right. No, that's fine. It's just Satchel should be plus.
Yeah, Rag Pokemon should be up on the D-pad.
It's not that hard of a that's not even a thing where it's like, oh, or they weren't given enough time. Or just have mappable
controls.
This, like, yeah, you could also just let me remap
Nintendo
my controls.
Nintendo doesn't do mappable controls. Not since the Dark. They're pretty sure that's what went wrong with the Wii U.
Masahiro Sakurai is the only one that lets you remap your button controls.
Yeah, but he can't make a menu, so like,
that's also fair.
Yeah. They're just not big into accessibility over there, apparently.
Yeah. So I'm going to talk about the part of this game that I think is like kind of bad, because I think that like gameplay wise, this game is great, even if visually it looks horrible, except for I think the noble Pokemon fights are bad. A, because they try to be an action RPG where you need to dodge stuff, but your character moves extremely clunkily, takes forever to start moving again after a dodge roll.
Yeah.
Your Z targeting, you're always fighting them in this small arena, but your Z targeting only reaches half of the arena away. So you can't lock onto them the entire time.
Yeah, it's bad.
My favorite part about the lock-on is I'm pretty sure it's not based on your position. It's based on the camera's position.
That would make sense.
If there's a Pokemon just far enough that you can't lock onto it, you can put it like to the periphery of your vision just barely, and usually you'll be able to lock onto it then.
And I've also had times where I inadvertently lock onto something behind me instead. Yep. So that would make sense if that's closer to the camera.
Yeah. And that's also, I assume, why whenever I hit the lock-on button and I'm not close enough to a Pokemon, as it pulls back, the lock-on icon comes up for a split second.
I feel like they just don't, and this is something, like, me and my wife talked about this a lot, because she hated these fights, and after the first couple, she would just hand me the controller, because she's like, I have no interest in this part of the game. This is bad. And so I wound up doing all of them, and it takes what should be the biggest boss encounters and makes them so meaningless as far as like combat in the game goes, because
yeah, there's no punishment.
Right. Once you get to fighting them, they're never hard. I don't think we ever fought one that we couldn't get through all of its health in two hits with one of our Pokemon. And so it takes what should be, you know, like if you compare it to like Sun and Moon, where you had those actual boss fights, it takes what should be the peak, like these moments that you're working towards, and makes them into just, here's the part where I have to dodge around really jankily for a while and then do the easiest fight I've ever done in the entire game before I can move on to going back to like what actually works in this game.
I don't think I'd say they're bad, but I do agree that they're boring.
They're just not like, I don't want to do, like, it got to the point where we'd just be like, oh, we have to do a noble Pokemon fight again. And I don't know if you've hit it yet, Joe, but there's one in a lava area where the arena you're fighting it in isn't a circle and has a bunch of invisible walls everywhere.
Oh, rad.
Yeah.
Where, like, so then you're trying to dodge, but you can't actually dodge through the entire arena. So you're constantly running into invisible walls and trying to stay locked onto this Pokemon while seeing where you're going. And then you question whether you even should lock on, because I realize, like, oh, I move about three times as fast when I'm not locked on. So it's way easier to dodge if I just free camera this shit. And it's like the gameplay of this game is so good, and like moving through the world and tracking down Pokemon and doing all that in real time is incredible. And these boss fights just suck ass. They're so bad.
I do kind of just wish they were just Pokemon battles.
Yeah, just let them be Pokemon battles.
Like, that's, I'm playing a Pokemon game. That's
not the part of the game that was broken. Like,
I do like how in battles, though, like, I think another podcast that I listened to described it as, it's really cool in this game how when you are in a Pokemon battle, you have to account for the fact that, as they put it, Hyper Beam is basically a Kamehameha. And you will get hit if you don't get out of the way.
And that's great. And like, and that should be the way the boss, and like, heck, you can even have the bosses go. So like
the boss they could move go around after you.
Yeah. Like you could have that happen within the turn-based battle, and that would be awesome. But trying to do this garbage, weird, janky Dark Souls dodge roll thing is just so out of place in an otherwise extremely well-designed game.
Yeah. And it just, throwing the bags isn't exciting.
No.
And there's also, like, and I understand in universe it makes sense that you can't, but you can't even catch them.
No. Like, why are we here?
And I get it, like, I 100% get, okay, yeah, this is dealing with like a lot of references to Ainu culture, which is really weird. If you did not know,
I saw some of that.
Yeah, the Ainu were the indigenous people, or are, I believe they're still around, of Hokkaido, which is what Sinnoh is based on, Sinnoh and Hisui. And the Japanese weren't super cool to them, as is the cycle of that. But this, you look at like some of the fashion and everything, and it's heavily based on that. And so if you're going to base it on the spiritualism stuff and all that. Okay, fine. These are important Pokemon. You can't just go catch God, even though I assume at some point in this game I will catch God. That's the title of the game. Yeah. But
Pokemon sorry, catch God.
Spoiler.
It makes sense.
The character in the title does show up.
It makes sense, but it's also just like, I'm playing a Pokemon game where you're making me fight a Pokemon I'm not allowed to catch.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't like it.
Yeah, I would agree that so far, those are the weakest parts of the game for me.
Do a sequel to this. Keep everything like it is, but get rid of those, please. Thank you.
Yeah, just throw those in the trash. We don't need them. Or make movement feel better at the very least if you're going to do it.
Yeah, let Platinum Games make the boss battles.
Yeah, if you're going to make it an action RPG, at least make it a good one.
Yeah, oh, where's the Platinum Games Scyther RPG? Oh, I want that now.
Yeah, I'd do that.
No, you have three different playable characters. It's Scyther, Caesar, and Cleaver.
Oh, that would be rad.
So good.
Let Platinum make the next Mystery Dungeon, and it's that. It's nothing like a Mystery Dungeon game. These are my demands.
Maybe Legends can just be the naming system for all of just the weird Pokemon games. So it'll just be Pokemon Legends Scyther is just is just a hack and slash.
Pokemon Legends Bidoof. What kind of game is that?
I was going to say, Sinnoh already has the best candidate, and it's Bidoof.
I think Pokemon Legends Bidoof is a Sonic the Hedgehog game. You roll around as Bidoof at the speed of sound.
Random Pokemon generator. Yeah, let's do it.
There's always a random anything generator if you look hard enough.
We're going to generate Pokemon Legends Bidoof.
That's just one letter off from what we already have.
That's just Bidoof Adventures 2.
Let's do another one. I feel like, can I exclude? Because I got a lot of Sinnoh Pokemon. That's no fun. All right. Pokemon Legends Vileplume. What kind of game is that?
It's an Atelier game.
Yes.
Slam dunk answer. It's an Atelier game where you are making like concoctions in the woods. And they may or may not be drugs. We don't know.
I'm trying to get something good. Pokemon Legends Palossand.
Ooh. That RTS. Is a no. This is a Dead by Daylight style game.
Oh.
You're in a palace. You have to escape before it sucks you in and consumes you.
That's pretty good.
I want to play that now.
they'll do that after the Dragon Ball one.
Man, I hope that game doesn't suck. It probably will, but I can hope.
It's such a weird pitch.
It is such a weird pitch, and I'm very, very interested to see if they actually pull it off.
Yeah.
All right, let's do one last one. Pokemon Legends Venusaur.
Clicker game.
Yeah. Some kind of farming game. Like I feel like once you get to a grass Pokemon, that's when you could be like, it's Pokemon, but it's Stardew Valley.
Yeah.
Where you need to like befriend nearby Pokemon.
Do you get to like romance them?
You can marry the Pokemon.
As long as they're in the same egg group.
Yeah. that might be. I feel like there's potential in going to the random Pokemon generator and trying to figure out what would be the Pokemon Legends Pokemon name game tied to that Pokemon.
There are so many options.
Be a good game show.
Yeah.
Pick two people to do it, then have the other people vote on what answer they like best.
Yeah.
Yeah, they have to improvise the pitch on the spot. Yeah. Essentially. Oh, that sounds fun. I'd do that.
We should do that. Write it and remind us to do that, because we won't remember after this.
Yep.
All right. Remember how I said that we weren't going to take a long time talking about Arceus and we're just going to do a quick update on it?
There's just so much to talk about.
There's a lot.
It's a really fun game to talk about, too, because it's actually good.
Yeah.
Yeah, and there's so much new. It feels like a totally different... Yeah. But... We brought Joe to talk about video game music.
Because that's my brand now.
Joe, real quick, before we get into talking about last year's video game music, pitch your show for anybody listening to this that hasn't listened to your show. And I don't mean the bad one that you do with that Matt guy.
Yeah.
So I do a podcast, a weekly podcast with my friend Peter Spezia. We do a show called Original Sound Chat, where we both pick a video game every week, and we sit down and we research the development history of that game, and then we do a deeper dive into both the history of the person who made the music and then in the music itself. And then we grab five critical tracks from each game, and we sort of talk about why generally they're not just the best tracks in the game, but a lot of them are like, this is the track you're going to hear a lot. It's important to the game. It plays during an important event, et cetera, et cetera. And we do the end of the year, which, by the way, we just turned 3 years old as of this week.
Happy birthday.
That's cool. We do a countdown of the best soundtracks of the year at the end of every year. And our best of 2021 was about a month ago at this point. And it was a lot, and it was very intimidating to put it together. But I think we did a really good job, because, hey, 2021 had some damn good video game music.
Mm-hmm.
Just in general. Had so many that we had to start last year with the honorable mentions, because every song that we talked about in the top 10 gets a 45-second sample of that track. Honorable mentions get one sample, 30 seconds of one track. And then the honorable mentions just get mentioned, because we legitimately could. There were 30 of them. There were so many of them. And even then, like, one of the ones that ended up in honorable mentions, I played the game. That was the first game I finished this year. And, like, honestly, I might have put that in my top 10. Being Demon Turf.
Yeah, it was a good soundtrack.
That game's soundtrack is it's really a very good. Soundtrack.
I think the game itself is meh, but the soundtrack is very, very good.
I liked it.
The final boss theme of Demon Turf might actually legitimately be one of my favorite tracks from anything last year. It's fantastic.
It reminds me of Splatoon, but like grungier.
When I asked you how it was, that's exactly how you described it.
Yeah, actually. It's very good. It's weird, but I like it a lot.
It's got a lot of, like, the whole game is just dripping with personality and attitude.
Yes.
And the soundtrack really does a very good job. Soundtrack by M.R. Miller and Fat Bard. Those are the names of the people that did it. It does a really, really good job of bringing that across just in the music alone. But mm-hmm. It also has this really neat thing where, like, in boss fights, which is where I think all the best music lives in that game in general, you can hear it like slowly go from, oh, ha ha, the boss isn't taking this seriously, Beeps is this tiny little child, to, mm-hmm. oh, I have to take this seriously now. This kid is actually beating the crap out of me. And yeah. It's, you can especially hear that in the final boss, where like the first phase of the final boss is it's summoning like a bunch of shadow clones of the bosses from the rest of the game. And that's just like all four boss themes just sort of layered on top of each other, and it's really good. But then for the two other phases, it slowly turns way more and more into Biebs's leitmotifs, mm-hmm. until the end of the song, it's just all Biebs. And I eat that up. It's yeah. so good.
Yeah. Yes. Theme your music.
Tell me
a story.
So good. But like, I just made a list of what I consider to be sizable names of people that put soundtracks in. I'm not even naming game names, though some of you might know what they are, just dropping out. This is just from 2021. Yuzo Koshiro, Kang Gao, two soundtracks with Joel Korolitz on it, Gareth Coker, Revo, in case you forgot, like I did, that Bravely Default 2
that
was
did
last
come out
year.
Last year.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I completely forgot.
It was totally okay. Music's good.
Atsushi Kitajo, Shoji Meguro, Takaharu Ishimoto, making my personal favorite soundtrack of the year. Yasumasa Kitagawa, Big Giant Circles, Nobuo Uematsu doing what might end up being his last soundtrack as a main composer. Keiichi Okabe, Austin Wintory, Bear McCreary, Toby Fox, Masashi Hamauzu, two soundtracks by Lena Raine, Shusuke Uchiyama, Disaster Piece, Motoi Sakuraba, and Masahiro Sakuraba.
Wait, what?
Yeah, he did Tales of Arise, Motoi Sakuraba.
Well, no. Disaster Piece, but he probably did the new guy from Hyperlight.
Drifter, yeah, he was one of the people that worked on Solar Ash. There was a second name that I was not familiar with, but he was involved in Solar Ash.
Disaster Piece, honestly, probably one of my favorite game and film composers. He worked with for the horror movie It Follows, and then the fucking acid trip of a movie that director made, which is basically like It Follows did very well, and then I assume people were like, here's a blank check to do whatever you want, and he just did this absolutely insane bizarre movie called Under the Silver Lake that stars the greatest actor of our day, Andrew Garfield. I don't know if it's a good movie, but y'all should see it. It is wild.
Yeah, and in games previously, he's been known.
He did Fez.
Yeah. He did Hyperlight Drifter,
which are two phenomenal soundtracks.
Yes,
and 100%. What's really interesting about like It Follows, you can hear that, and you're like, oh, this is Disaster Piece. like it totally. Like I think when It Follows came out, I think I had played Fez kind of recently, and was like, why is this so familiar? And then I looked up and saw it was Disaster Piece. But the thing about Under the Silver Lake is that like it, you can kind of tell it's the dude with the chiptune background trying to do a more traditional score, and it's very interesting.
The only two things that this year were missing was personally no Yoko Shimomura soundtrack yet. One day we'll get another one. But also Chip Zell didn't put anything out this year.
Dicey Dungeons,
which, oh god, please, Dicey Dungeons got pulled off of Spotify last month.
Oh, did it?
For not because of anything bad, it was just she's switching.
They talked bad about Joe Rogan.
Yeah,
she's switching
distributors.
Record. Yeah, publishers.
Okay. Oh,
and
sure.
It's gonna go back up eventually. And I made the stupid mistake of the week before Pokemon Arceus came out, sitting down to get back into Dicey Dungeons. And now all of the music is back in my head and I can't listen to it.
That game absolutely rules. Like,
oh, it's great.
Holy crap.
And like legitimately probably one of the best soundtracks of the decade. And we're only a couple years into it.
Yeah.
It's insane. This year, just in general, though, even without those two, like, damn.
Yeah.
And there's, like, also just a bunch of niche stuff. Like, Keiji Okabe, like, worked on a game, and I have not heard anybody talk about the soundtrack to the Isle Dragon Roars, Voice of Cards. But that's
The game did come out.
He's part of it. He's not the only one on the soundtrack.
I was too wrapped up in Dungeon Encounters, which I don't think that I feel like the soundtrack of that, I don't know if it's good or not. But I think it has good legacy.
There's also, like you've talked about, Dodgeball Academia, which I haven't gotten to yet, but I have listened to some of the soundtrack. That game's
great, and the soundtrack is very good.
Yeah, it was an honorable mention, and look, there were a lot, there was a lot of stuff, but like, you've also got like Road 96, which has this really, weird soundtrack to it, where it's partially like folk music, but then also half of it is super hard club synth, and it's this bizarre mix, or like Knockout City, which is just this really, really jazz-infused soundtrack for this dodgeball game that is really, really neat. There is so much good stuff. Sable, which has been taking home some awards
Has a really cool soundtrack.
Oh, and actually, Dungeon Encounters is Nobuo Uematsu, but it sucks. That's, I just had to refresh my memory. It is a phoned-in soundtrack. It's not good.
But that's okay, because Fantasian's soundtrack is really, really good.
Yeah.
Excellent. Dungeon Encounters, dope game. The soundtrack is just butt rock.
Yeah, Fantasian is one that I saw it popped up on Spotify, and I'm like, I am never going to play that game, but I will put this soundtrack on my playlist.
I just want it to come out on anything that's not Apple Arcade. I don't own an Apple device, and I don't really feel like giving Apple money. But I want to play Fantasian. I've heard it's good.
I played the first half and then just accepted the fact when they were like, the second half, 60 hours long. I'm like, I'm never playing that on my iPad.
Yeah.
I would. Yeah. I'm right now I've turned heel. Initially I was just like, if you want to play it, get Apple Arcade, support it. And at this point I'm like, yeah, when it comes to a console that I actually like play regularly, then I will totally finish it.
That's how I am with a couple of games now, honestly.
Like I supported Apple Arcade for a while. I think it's a good service, but it's just not one that is as convenient for me to play. And as much as I think Fantasian rules, like the battle, some of the stuff that they do with the battle system and how you explore the world is like brilliant game changing shit. But also it like visually looks stunning. The story, but it's like, please bring that game somewhere else. Free it.
Anywhere. Yeah. Anywhere else. Just congratulations, it's now on Stadia.
No, I mean, that would be more accessible for me, weirdly.
I'm gonna be honest, I'm kind of surprised that hasn't happened already. Do games still come out on Stadia?
I mean, there's like the Thunderful exclusive that came out last year that apparently is very good.
That's where I'm at with Pixel Junk Raiders, which looks like a game that I would really dig. But like,
it looks awesome.
I'm not gonna. I don't want to stream.
I even have the controller for Stadia because I got it with like my Verizon account just for free. They were handed it out, and like, it would not be difficult. I've got pretty good internet. I have Chromecasts. This would not be tough to do, and I can't be fucked.
I just disagree with it on like a moral level. like I will not.
I will do the subscription service to Apple, but if you want me to stream shit, F off.
I mean, I pay. Yeah, I can't do streaming.
I will stream a game if it is a thing that is included in a thing I already pay for, like Game Pass, where it's like, I didn't pay for the streaming. I paid for all this other stuff, and also games can stream, and I can like fuck around with it and be like, that doesn't work very well, and then move on.
I can play Banjo-Kazooie on my phone. Yeah. For 25 seconds and go, huh, this sucks.
Oh man.
And then turn it off.
I did that for the Banjo-Kazooie video that went up on NWR TV, which was weird to do that directly at, like, I was getting off screen footage of that and it running on Switch. And I'm just like, God, this is a terrible way to play this game handheld.
But yeah, like I pay for Game Pass and that's perfectly fine, even though It's created this other problem where it's like, there's too many games. I don't know what to play.
There's too many games.
I don't know what to play.
Debatably, I should cancel my Game Pass subscription at this point.
I switched mine back to only GameCube. If only.
That's an option?
If only.
John found that option.
You know what? I don't even feel bad about saying that because it's like, I think it has to be legal by how easy it is. I got GameCube games running on my Xbox Series X without modding it, without putting it into dev mode. I just went and downloaded the RetroArch app. Like, it should... Like,
An app on Xbox?
You can't get it through the... You just open up the web browser and go to a website and go to RetroArch and download it, and it downloads as a native app.
You don't even need to put it on, like, a flash drive?
No, you just go... Like, I just went to my computer... Threw some ROMs on a USB 3.0 stick, put it in the back of my Xbox, and started playing Metroid Prime.
Come a long way since the Homebrew channel.
It's so easy that like I feel like it can't be illegal.
Yeah. No, I remember I'd have to like pray to a dark god to get my Wii to play like Disaster.
Like, I feel like it's like, no, I'm not modding it. Like, my Xbox just natively plays GameCube. Like, I think that was just a function. Like, I can like take screen captures. Like,
it is sincerely just like a system made where they were just like, well, if this doesn't work, we're fucked. So
like, I was on the Xbox website for something else and I saw my like achievement, like my recently played list on the side, and on like the official Xbox website, it just says RetroArch at the top with the logo and everything. Like, I'm like, what the?
Oh, the logo.
How is
too.
This okay?
Oh, that's amazing.
Like, it's like the native, it just works. It's, I don't understand how it's okay, but I guess it is.
I downgraded mine back to PC only because I bought an Xbox One, so I had something to play Banjo-Tooie on for Smashterpieces. That was a year ago. I haven't turned it on since.
What a horrible reason to buy an Xbox One.
Oh, yeah, no. Everybody, if you haven't played Banjo-Tooie recently, it's very good.
Nope.
No.
Nope.
It's not a great game.
You know what is a good game? Banjo-Kazooie Nuts and Bolts.
You really threaded the needle on Banjo-Kazooie yeah. experiences.
You know what's a better game than Banjo-Tooie? Banjo-Pilot.
And like Grunty's Revenge.
Yeah, Grunty's Revenge is like, exactly that,
literally all of them. There is not a Banjo game that is worse than Banjo-Tooie.
I do always want to call out the beginning of Banjo-Tooie where like Bottles just dies. Like, yeah. That's very funny. That's it's a very great. Good joke.
There's a lot of funny writing and stuff in Banjo-Tooie. It's just doing literally anything in that game is like a 10-step process.
I do believe that the opening cutscene is like unskippable in 15 minutes.
Oh, long. It sure fucking is. You're correct on that. It took 2 months to get through Banjo-Tooie. It's not a good game. But yeah, video game music. It's good.
If you get an Xbox Series X and play Banjo-Tooie through RetroArch, you can fast forward through that opening cutscene.
You know you have Game Pass. You could just download Rare Replay, right? Yeah, I know.
Yeah.
I'm aware. But yeah, Game Pass has this like second problem where it's like there's 50 games here. And it has a cool feature that I wish other stuff had. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, there's like hundreds.
I had to say a name. I had to say some number. There's one feature on the Game Pass, at least on PC, that I really like, even though I've never made use of it and never will, is that roulette thing where you can click on it. It's like, here's what you should play next. I think that's neat. I will never listen to it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't want robots telling me what to do. Anyway, let's do the random Pokemon generator.
Half of the games that I play on Game Pass are me downloading something to get comparison footage for something that came out on Switch. So I don't think Game Pass actually has a good handle on what I like and what I don't like.
I have 8 Game Pass games installed on my computer right now. They've been the same 8 games since September. The one time that the most recent time that I played a game on Game Pass was Carto, because it was leaving Game Pass literally the next day. And it's only like 3 hours long.
You know, it's a great game.
Carto's pretty good.
Yeah, Carto's a very good game.
It was a pretty good game. Sometimes that can get you off your ass to play a game, and sometimes it could be like Alex mentioned in the stream chat last night, where it told him Yakuza 0 is leaving Game Pass in 2 weeks. He was like, well, I can't play this game in 2 weeks.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's funny. Like, I had all these ambitions. I wound up playing like a dragon, and like that was fine. A little bit grindy, a little too long.
Don't get me started on Like a Dragon.
I kept on having these aspirations about like, you know what, like I should play through that. They're all on Game Pass. I like installed Zero and started it once.
And like, that's a shit. Cause like Zero, I think might actually be one of the best action RPGs ever made ever.
They should bring it to Switch.
Boy, should they.
Just play the Wii U version.
Zero's not on Wii U, John. That's Yakuza 1 and 2, the two you should not play.
Yeah.
Does it have the Mark Hamill dub on the Wii U version?
No. Is it just the Japanese version? It only came out in Japan. It never came out in the West.
Bullshit.
So we didn't... Mark Hamill doesn't even remember playing Majima. Somebody asked him and showed him a picture once, and he was like, I have no memory of this man. That's how long ago that was.
That's because they had to mind wipe them before the Star Wars movies.
I've tried to play Yakuza a couple times and can never get into it. But if they went through and just put in Mark Hamill, everybody else still speaks Japanese.
So here's the thing with that. I don't want that because there's a very specific reason. Mark Hamill voiced Goro Majima, who is the best character in all of Yakuza. And his Japanese voice actor plays him so goddamn well. Like, it's probably one of the best Japanese voice performances I've ever heard, ever. He's so good at playing this deeply, deeply crazy, scary man. There's a scene in Yakuza 2 where there are a bunch of bombs set up in the city, and it shows a bunch of You've gathered your friends to go put it, like, defuse the bombs. And one of them is Majima with his poor, poor assistant. And they're looking at it. This is like, what color do I snip? Majima's like, I don't fucking know. I don't defuse bombs. I don't know. I'll cover my eyes and I'll cut the... And he's insane. and his Japanese voice actor is so good at insane. Whereas I do wish Mark Hamill would come back. I just don't want him to voice Majima because Majima's voice actor is so good.
I can support the idea of just having Mark Hamill play a random different character in each game.
There's at least one side quest in every Yakuza game where you meet a white guy. That could be Mark Hamill.
That could just be Mark Hamill every time.
Every it's
just
time.
They just rebrand Yakuza in the West to just be the quest for Mark Hamill. After you do that side quest, it just rolls credits.
But yeah, Yakuza is really, really good. Zero is what got me and Matt into the series, and then we just sat down and played all of them until 6, and then neither of us like a Dragon, unfortunately. Yeah.
Now Judgment is for you.
Well, it was. There will probably never be another Judgment again because of the main actors.
Oh, yeah.
The main actors' agency. So they're probably just never making that anymore. Woo!
Can they just recast?
Maybe, but they
got very in deep with that.
You know
guy.
Who's free though?
Mark Hamill.
My favorite description of what would happen in Judgment 3 was somebody describing it as Lost Judgment's really good. It's a shame that the next game will start with the main character getting hit by a car and dying.
Off screen.
Or you can only see the back of his head. They never turn him around.
Yeah.
Yakuza is really good, everybody. People should play Yakuza. It's really, really, really good. Kiryu is my dad, and he's everybody's dad. That I don't know what more pitch you want here. Do you want a dad? Kiryu has a lot of room in his dad list.
If there's one thing I'm not short of in our current media culture, it's dads.
Yeah, but I got there's a always lot of room dads. For another I'm, one.
I am rolling in dads.
Do you have any idea how many times I claim a character my dad or my son or my wife or my daughter?
I've heard it a
lot. Is it always the same character?
Not always. It depends on what character it is. I had a
who
lot
in
of
Kingdom
sons.
Heart, who in Kingdom Hearts is your dad?
Donald Duck.
Donald Duck. No, okay. Goofy. Goofy is my dad. Sorry. No, the answer is Goofy. Goofy is everybody's
Who's
dad.
Who's your son?
My son is Donald.
Okay.
My Who's wife your is my wife is Tinkerbell because she's overpowered in Kingdom Hearts 1 and saved me from having to fight bad bosses for very long. she's literally regen that never goes away. You summon her, she never goes away. It's overpowered.
I'm kind of disappointed that you guys did your Kingdom Hearts thing before the streaming versions came out. Because I would have 100% made it an NWR executive order that if you're going to stream Kingdom Hearts, that's the version you have to stream.
Matt wanted to start one of our streams a couple weeks ago with the demo. We decided not to because we had too much crap to do, but he wanted to.
I have the demos downloaded, but I believe the demos came out right when I got the Legends Arceus code, and that's basically all I've done.
Matt is positive I will somehow end up with the review codes for that. And we'll have to play Kingdom Hearts 1 again.
It can be done.
Oh, God.
Are they giving out review codes for that? That seems like a tactical error.
I do like for it's 75, for $75, you can own 3 games that you don't actually own.
Right, that you can buy for $20 total elsewhere.
Yeah, plus you'll have them and you'll be able to play them on the machine that you own. It's Square Enix. All they do is tactical errors.
Yeah.
Have That's you true. Ever seen, like...
Just bring back Chrono Cross, you sons of bitches.
Listen, there was one glorious day where someone at Square Enix said, we're going to make Project Sylphide. And everyone was like, this is an incredible space shooter that everyone will love.
That's
and then nobody
game.
Played it.
Yeah.
And from then on out, they're like, I guess we'll just make
hey
trash.
Guys, we are like 30 days away from... Triangle Strategy.
The stupidest goddamn name they've ever...
It's like at least Octopath Traveler, like,
it
legitimately...
It sounds fantasy-ish. Fantasy-ish.
Yeah, it sounds fantasy-ish, and it does legitimately tie into what that story is. In Triangle Strategy, I know there's, like, I think there's probably 3 different factions, and I think, like, whenever you have options, it's like, do you go by law or emotion or a third thing?
No, I like that Square Enix is naming their games like it's an Atari 2600 game. They're just like, here are all of the genres and things you do in the game.
They should do a dating game called like Sextuple Therapy.
Oh God, I'd buy that game immediately. That would sell so well. They wouldn't even have to market it. People would be really disappointed when they found out what it actually is, but it would sell immediately.
All right, guys, in 2 years, we're going to have, it's a dating sim RPG. It's called Project Thruple Magic.
Isn't that just a DS game? Rub Rabbits, Feel the Magic? Why do I know that game exists? Oh, my roommate.
That's why. You know what? Feel the Magic. Feel the Magic. Pretty solid DS launch title.
That's what I hear from one person. Now two, I guess.
Yeah. Like, if you look at the context now, when I was like 16 in 2004 or whatever, it seemed funny and not creepy. But it's just like a weird little like WarioWare kind of thing that used the touchscreen in interesting ways. And then the Rub Rabbits made it a little weirder. But like, yeah, fine games.
We should do a game club.
Okay.
I have a bone to pick with the game club stuff. I bought the Castlevania GBA collection.
Hey, if it makes you feel better, me too.
Same.
And I played halfway through one of them and was like, I actively hate this.
I will say, enjoyed Circle of the Moon more than I kind of expected.
Is that what I played? Okay.
Yeah.
I haven't started fine. Any of them yet, but
Harmony of Dissonance is fucking terrible.
Yeah,
the second one is so bad because I was like, oh, Circle of the Moon. Like, I didn't think this would hold up that well. Like, it's fine. I don't love it, but like, this is fine. And I was like, Harmony of Dissonance, I've heard it's a little rougher. Like, yes, it is.
I really like the package. I like that it lets me do the audio without Game Boy compression. Like I think it is a very nice package of games that I think suck.
Here's the thing. Konami, I want one thing. Put both of the 64 Castlevania games on NSO. You're not selling those separately.
Yes. Yeah.
Do it.
You at any point, nobody will buy it. Just put them on NSO. They're bad. I know. I've played them. Not all the way, but I want to play them again.
But like, I mean, who knows? Winback turned out to be one of the best games ever made. So like, maybe we'll revisit Castlevania 64 now and be like, oh,
no,
man.
I played Castlevania 64 recently on stream in October of 2020. No, that's not how it'll happen.
Maybe the last 2 years made a real difference.
That game is bad, but I want it. I want both of them. Give them to me, Konami.
I've never played the second one.
I mean, I just hope they put out more Castlevania games. Just
I hope,
period.
Okay.
Also,
I hope
why
they put
is
out,
it Rondo and Symphony not
that's
on Switch?
What
why
I was going to say is I really hope 64 comes out before Symphony of the Night.
So theory with that is I think because isn't the Rondo Symphony 2-pack, it seems like it's PlayStation console exclusive.
I believe so. I don't think it's on Xbox.
Yeah.
But like
so,
Symphony of the Steam? Night, it's... Symphony of the Night itself has come out on Xbox before,
yeah, well,
right?
It is backwards compatible. It is the 360 version because I bought that game 15 years ago on my 360 and still occasionally play a couple hours of it on my Xbox One or Series X.
But literally when I tweeted about like, oh, I want Castlevania 64 and Legacy of Darkness, Donald responded with, don't give them any ideas. They need more ideas to keep dodging releasing Symphony of the Night on Switch.
Yeah.
But my thing is that, like, one, I don't, it's been a very long time since I played the Nintendo 64 Castlevania games. I don't think they are quite as bad as they have been made out to be. I mean, I can assure you they've aged like milk, but like, I remember having fun with that first one. And there's something about even the shitty games in series that we enjoy, like, let me play them.
Bad N64 games are at least fun to sit down with friends and be like, look at how terrible, like, the worst NES games suck. They're terrible, and I would not wish them upon my greatest enemies. SNES can go either way, but bad N64 games, that's some quality entertainment right there.
Yeah, it's really the, like, origins of the so bad it's good video game.
Yeah.
Because there's definitely a thing of like, old 2D games, the so bad it's good, like it's just hard and sucks.
Just not fun,
Except for, you know what's a really good, so bad it's good game? The Adventures of Tom Sawyer on the NES.
I think I've heard about it, but I don't think I've ever played
it's like, I believe it's like a Square Enix made game where you're just like Tom Sawyer on a boat fighting rats.
Well, it'd just be Square at that time. I constantly have to remind myself how recent that merger was in the grand scheme of things.
I mean, it kind of wasn't. It's 20 years ago, man.
Yeah, but so was Metroid Prime. And that just happened.
Like, Kingdom Hearts and Final Fantasy X both happened before that merger.
You do realize, like, at this point, like, more time has passed since, like, Square had games on Nintendo consoles before Enix.
Yeah, it's weird. I don't like thinking about it. It's so... Because, like, in my brain, that was before I was following video games, like, news-wise. I was too young. I was stupid. In my head, it's like, oh, yeah, it's always been like that since back in, like, the... What? No, 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 no. But then you find out about how Square almost fucked it all up, and it almost didn't happen at all. Because Spirits Within bombed so goddamn hard that Enix was like, maybe no. And then both Kingdom Hearts and Final Fantasy X had to be like these runaway successes to bring them back to the table.
So double check this. The game that I was referring to was made by SETA, SETA. And I didn't know this, that the Japanese, like the last level, the Japanese version is inexplicably the first level in the English version. And it's way harder.
What?
But also, there is a Square Tom Sawyer RPG that came out of the Famicom in 1989.
There's always a Famicom game. Without fail, there's always a Famicom game.
Does it have, like, Final Fantasy lineage?
Oh, God, I hope. Did Sakaguchi write it?
Did Umetsu do the music?
Let's see. It doesn't look like Takashi Tokita is an artist on it.
Did they make Sakaguchi read Dockleberry?
Hiroyuki Itoi is a designer on the game. But I have a screenshot of this game that I'll have to share with you guys. Like, this is... and it's also noted as an example of racism in video games. Well, it's Tom Sawyer. What the hell did you expect?
Sawyer being handled by a Japanese developer in the 80s.
Oh, God. Yeah, no, it was probably worse than we think.
Yeah. Yeah.
Ooh, yeah. Boy. Oh, they're not even great about that now.
Right.
Here, I just sent it to the Slack of what it looks like.
Oh, sweet.
Like,
it looks like Dragon Quest.
Oh, my God. It does. It looks kind of like Sweet Home, too, a little bit. It
looks like Dragon Quest, but they're fighting a snake developed by Rare in the 90s.
It was scored by Uematsu. So.
Was it really?
Yes.
Oh, I know what I'm bringing for April Fools at OSC this year.
Yeah. What do you mean April Fools? That's just...
I know what I'm bringing for next week.
So Sakaguchi was not involved because he made Final Fantasy during this time.
Really made the wrong choice there.
It was Hiromichi Tanaka was the person who's still at Square. What else did he work on? He director of Final Fantasy III on DS, director of Trials of Mana.
I like to think about the imagery of them just locking Sakaguchi, even if he didn't work on the game, just in a room and throwing in a single copy of Huckleberry Finn in English and making and like write a game.
Characters can equip no weapons and fight with their fists, but there are large numbers of collectible items. You can find key cards and black magic.
I'm going to regret asking this question, but how is the character Jim referred to? Can read it on this podcast? That's a yes or no question.
It is. I'm looking to see if there's a fan translation of the game, and then we'll see how these fans feel.
Ooh. Does Jim show up in Tom Sawyer, or is that not until Huckleberry Finn? You might be in the wrong book.
No, Tom Sawyer's in Huckleberry Finn.
Right, it's part of the extended Huckleberry universe.
Mark Twain cinematic universe.
Yeah.
When is that crossover? Hey, Hollywood? When is that crossover? Crossover with the character I literally can't say the name of out loud.
Yeah. There's apparently, it doesn't look like it's a finished fan translation, but there was some work in one.
The music seems totally okay.
Yeah.
I mean, it's Uematsu. Even when he phones it in, it's still pretty all right. Okay, I have to start getting ready for bed, gentlemen.
Yeah, we should probably end this podcast. At least we circled back around to music at the end there.
Yeah,
apparently that counts.
Okay, okay. Yeah, now I'm reading. I'm not going to read any of this aloud because it's very bad. But apparently, like, there is blackface in this game, and it is, like, horrendous.
Oh, that checks
yeah,
out.
Yeah. That would once again, Japanese people in the 80s making a game based on Tom Sawyer. That's not going to end well.
that was doomed from minute one. Before we wrap up, I do want to mention back on the video game music thing. Hey, everybody, go play Eastward. It's a really good game, and its soundtrack is phenomenal.
I almost got that on sale, but the sale was only like 10%, and then I bought like 14 other games, and I'm only one man.
It's in my top three for last year, and also soundtrack-wise, it's also in my top three. It's really, really, really good. I would personally recommend Eastward to just about anybody that likes. If you want the very specific combination of what if we took The Last of Us and The Legend of Zelda, 2D Zelda, smashed it into a blender and then poured that into a Mother 3 cartridge, that's Eastward. It's really good. I highly recommend it. Also, if you've played The World Ends With You, you should buy Neo The World Ends With You so more than 10 people on Earth.
I haven't played it, but I bought it.
Its soundtrack's also good, but man, the frustrating part about The World Ends With You is I can't even just be like, everybody should go play Neo The World Ends With You, because that comes with the caveat of you should play the first one first. By the way, every version of the first one you could find now sucks.
Well, all right. With that, I think we'll call it an episode. Thank you, Joe and Neil, for joining me. And
I guess.
if you're listening to this on a platform where you can rate it, that's the thing you should do. You could also share it with your fish, because your fish is looking a little down and probably needs something to listen to.
Goldfish are famously depressed.
Yes. Yeah, and they need something to just whittle the hours away in their short existence.
They have to learn about the existence of war every 30 seconds for the first time.
Yeah. Follow us on Twitter at ConnectivityNWR. And you could send in some listener mail with your favorite Square Enix mistake to connectivity@NintendoWorldReport.com. Yeah, no, it's an ample. And I swear to God, if any of you write in and say Project Silphied, I will find you and I will stab you.
Oh, that's going to be everybody now. You understand that, but right?
But we'll get emails.
You know what? That's fair. All engagement is good engagement.
Reverse psychology. Yeah. I think that's everything. Go listen to Joe's podcast, Original Sound Chat.
It good.
And Smash Your Pieces is also good.
I think. One too. But that Matt's one has Matt
there.
On it.
Yeah, Matt's there, so like it's a bit of a value loss, but you know.
Yeah.
We're playing Metroid Prime right now. It's my first time ever playing Metroid Prime. So we're going to see how that goes.
Yeah. All right. Goodbye, everybody.
Bye.
This was made possible by our generous supporters on Patreon. Check out patreon.com/NWR for all the details.